Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance beneath the cover of October skies. You know the leaves on the trees are falling to the sound of the breezes that blow.
What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with you. And what is going on? How was your President's Day yesterday? Did you work? Did you have the day off? Of course, the markets were open electronically, and they managed to be higher again. But all in all, you know, I think we're getting close to a potential ending. Again, you know, it's not that it's over forever, but I think that, you know, you can only speculate on how much more the hope and a prayer can continue to push these markets higher. Of course, there are many other issues involved in the markets, but you know, that would be one of the things that we'd be looking at is, can the price and time, you know, can we continue to ignore the markets that continue just to go up like there's no tomorrow? You know, it's a very interesting, but, you know, this is the if you look at the market in stages, this would be the euphoria opportunity. And again, you cannot try to say, well, the top is in, because we cannot predict a top. However, we can say that, you know, we should start to look for some opportunities. And of course, there are things going on around the globe that could create some interest in some potential reasons to sell. You know, one of the things that's going on right now is you've got a large trader who is stuck. And when I mean stuck, he is stuck short, which is another reason that we continue to see markets propel higher. It doesn't mean a ton to you today, but it is something that, you know, the position was so big that they got the tap on the shoulder and they're being forced to liquidate. But even the clearing firm doesn't want to liquidate too fast because they don't want to take the beating either. So we're seeing a continuation. And if you watched last week, where we continued to see some selling come in, and then, of course, it was met with buying, and that was the person stuck trying to cover their position and try to get out of the mess that they're in. And that is one of the things I always warn everybody about, is trying to sell naked options. You know, if you do not have unlimited capital, then it's a very tough job to try to continue to sell naked. Because selling naked forces you to make a decision, and typically you will make the wrong decision when that particular moment in time comes up. You have to be very, very concerned and cautious about that. Now, again, you've heard these stories about, you know, what options do and how they always end up worthless. And again, I'm not saying that it can't happen. And I'm not saying you can't make money. There's been some very successful people that have done it. But again, this person that's doing it now was successful for years and now is getting run down. And it's always better to be in a position to have that unlimited profit potential versus that unlimited loss potential. It's always more painful when you put yourself in that position. So I think, but that could be one of the things that does actually create the event that might eventually lead to the potential major selling pressure. And again, I'm not predicting that that's going to be the case, but it is certainly something to think about, because at that point, you know, when this particular person is done, then what happens to the markets? And that's something that we look at. You know, it's not a prediction, but again, we know from a mathematical standpoint, we know from a standard deviation standpoint, we know from the rubber bands getting stretched too far, that at some point there's going to be a little bit of selling. You know, again, we don't know at the exact what point that's going to be yet, but something is going to create that event that will then possibly drive the markets lower. Again, we know it will not be an economic data event because we've had enough bad economic data, yet we continue to go higher. It could be something that has to do with, you know, the war on cash might create some issue. You know, there's with many of the nations trying to eliminate cash in favor of, you know, more of the plastic society. And, you know, that's why you're seeing some movement up in gold and some movement up in the Bitcoin and some other movements, because just for those reasons, you're seeing things like that happening. You may be looking at, you know, something goofy. I mean, you know, Bill Gates came out with a statement that if a company is going to replace employees with robots, then those robots should be taxed. Now, again, that's a far fetch. It's a long way. But again, we never know. We don't know what the next event that is going to actually be the catalyst to drive the market lower. What we do know is we are in a very euphoric stage right now. What we do know is that money is flowing in and everybody knows that the markets will never go down again. What we do know is that complacency is overwhelming right now and that nobody has any belief that there could ever be an issue or a problem. So if we follow that and we decide that that is actually an issue, well, then all of a sudden that could create the overall markets to start to move down. But in the meantime, until that happens, we have to continue to manage and follow the overall market footprint without trying to outsmart, outshine, outdo the markets, because the markets are always right. So no matter what I think about the current state of the market, it's always right. So all I'm doing is trying to fight against something that I am not going to win against, because the market doesn't make a mistake. It doesn't get sick. It doesn't get tired. It continues to trade. And what is it trading off of? It's trading off of the money flow. So basically, the money flow is going to run you over if you're trying to be against whatever's going on now. That doesn't mean that the money flow won't change. But right now, we are just simply trending higher and making new highs. And as long as we continue to make new highs, there is no assumption that they're going to stop. And I think that's one of the big mistakes that we make as traders, is we decide that, okay, well, this is enough. And we know that we're smarter than the market. And of course, that is not the case. We know that the markets are going to continue to churn. So just, again, you want to just observe the market. You want to make sure that you're putting yourself in the best mathematical probability model. You want to be prepared for what happens next. And that is done simply by watching the market footprint. And for right now, I mean, basically, if you wanted to short the market, you would not be shorting this market for at least a few days under any circumstances. Because we're not going to sell into the reverse sell-off, because we will assume that what will happen, is, which has happened every time, is the markets will indeed bounce first before the sell-off continues. You know, if you go back and look at any major sell-off, it didn't just go down in 1 second. It took time to work its way down. Just something to keep an eye on, things to keep in your mind as you are observing the market, getting ready to pull the trigger. This is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. And, of course, LibertyTalk.fm is where you can get the show every single day and download it, as well as now the Sporting Edge on LibertyTalk.fm. The last thing we've just added is Bubba's Bottom Line, which is a weekly podcast video once a week, which you can get at BubbaTrading.com. I'm going to step out here for a break. We'll be right back after the break with more. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz, coming right back to you. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. And as always, I get the number one guest across the globe. And today we've got a very special guest, Mark Hyden. excuse me, who is conservatives concerned about the death penalty. Mark, welcome to the show, man.
Todd, thanks for having me on.
So, Mark, tell me, A, about who you are, what you do, and in this movement of conservatives against the death penalty.
Well, Conservatives Concerned About the Death Penalty is a fairly new organization. We launched in 2013 at CPAC, and you know we were welcomed with open arms because we're sharing a message of conservatism, but educating people on how the death penalty violates our principles. And what I mean by that is, most of us conservatives are pro-life and support fiscal responsibility and limited government, but the death penalty risks innocent lives, so it can't be pro-life. Costs more than life without parole and leads to tax increases, so it can't be fiscally responsible. And I don't think there's anything limited about giving an error-prone government the power to kill its citizens. So this is the message that we've been carrying across the United States, and we've enjoyed a fair amount of success since our launch.
So now we look at the death penalty, and I guess my first question is it that besides being pro-life, do you believe that it does not defer criminals from acting upon it wouldn't change somebody's mind about getting in a crime that would create the death penalty?
Well, there's been no shortage of studies on the deterrent effect of the death penalty, and the largest of all studies was done by the National Academy of Sciences, and they found that there's no credible evidence to suggest that it deters murder. But there's further evidence if you look at the FBI uniform of crime statistics, because when states repeal the death penalty, their murder rates go down. You'd expect it to be the direct opposite if the death penalty had any sort of effect on people's actions.
So now, I mean, of course, I mean, the death penalty in its current state is like ridiculous. It's like you get in, and you know you get 92,000 appeals, and before they do anything, it's 10, 11, 12, 13 years sometimes before anybody gets executed. Would that be a deterrent, or is that not at all your message? Your message is straight. It's more of about a pro-life type of situation.
Well, a lot of our supporters oppose the death penalty for different reasons. It can be because of people's pro-life views or their stance on fiscal responsibility. But if you just want to do a cost-benefit analysis, you see this is a program that takes a long time to ever come to its final conclusion, if it ever reaches that point. Most of the time it doesn't. But it doesn't protect society, and it harms murder victims' family members because of the long, drawn-out process that you just mentioned. And that whole time, these poor family members have to relive the worst moments of their lives with each one of those appeals, those 92,000 appeals that you mentioned, although that number is probably not quite accurate.
Well, okay, so I exaggerated a little bit, but it's a lot. It's a big waste of time and money, in my opinion. So, again, I'm with you there. So go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, but now I do want to point out that, you know, a lot of people do point to these appeals as a source of waste. And I can understand that, but it's taken more than 30 years to exonerate some people from death row who were wrongly convicted. And these processes are mandated by the Supreme Court, so there's really no way around them.
Right. And again, I think that, to me, my personal views are that it's the appeal process is way too long, and there's too many things. And yes, they have found that they have made some errors, and again, of course, I believe that you believe in more state government and not so much federal involvement as well. Would that be correct?
I'm definitely a Tenth Amendment kind of guy.
Right. Okay. So, I mean, I just think, though, when I look at it, I go, okay, you know, typically if they would do it quickly, it might defer some of these people. But again, I'm not, you know, one or the other. I would like to see it stopped. And of course, what is the cost of the death penalty versus the cost of keeping somebody in prison for life?
Well, every state's going to be different because they have their own unique systems in place. But there's been close to 24 cost studies that give us a rough idea of the kind of fiscal abuse that we're looking at. In California, they've spent somewhere in the neighborhood of $5 billion on their death penalty program, and they've executed 13 people. Now, California's not known for, you know, being a bastion of conservatism, obviously. But further east, if you look at North Carolina, they found that per execution, it's about $2 million beyond the cost of life without parole. And, you know, these high costs have led to, as I mentioned, tax increases. Even in my home state of Georgia, they had to raise taxes multiple times just to fund the initial trials. That didn't even cover the cost of the appeals process, which added many more dollars, tax dollars, to the whole scheme.
So when you started this movement or got involved in the movement, what is your process? How are you going to get to your end game, and how are we going to get? Obviously, we want to make everybody aware of it, and obviously, we want to get it where it becomes off of the books, I'm assuming. So how do we work that process and get to your objective?
Well, it's complex, and it'll take a little while, as I'm sure you understand, Todd. But first and foremost, we wanted to shatter the myth that all conservatives support the death penalty, and I think we've done a good job of that. We've raised up many conservative voices from the grassroots to the grass tops. I mean, I get to work with people like Jay Sekulow and Colonel Oliver North and Dr. Ron Paul, who oppose the death penalty, which is wonderful. So we want to change the conversation, but beyond that, we need to educate people on what the death penalty does in practice rather than in theory, because there's a lot of misconceptions. A lot of people think the death penalty never makes a mistake. There are never any mistakes made in the death penalty process, and then it's also cheaper than life without parole. But, you know, Todd, me and you know that couldn't be further from the truth. So there's an educational component in this. And once we reach that point where we've educated the legislature as well as many of the grassroots, that's when we can push towards repealing the death penalty. And, you know, right now 31 states still have it on their books. But if you look at the states that actually use the death penalty, it's a tiny fraction of that number.
I mean, I mean, and I agree with that. And again, of course, I'm a fiscal guy, and I like to see, you know, the money spent in the proper area. So how do you get the people educated? Okay, I know obviously like a show like mine, you can educate a bunch of people, but how do you really get the education going? How do we get it to where people understand the point of view that you're coming from? Because again, I'm more about the money myself. I mean, I'm tired of the federal government reaching into my pocket every other day and taking more money out of my pocket because of what they want to do, and I'm not a big fan. So how do we get that message out there, and what's your time frame on that?
Well, each state is at a further place in the process. Like Utah is much closer to repealing the death penalty than my home state of Georgia. In fact, we've been doing some work in Utah. A repeal bill passed through the Senate and almost made it through the House. They just ran out of time last session. So they're going to be back there. So there's states that are much closer than others. So there's no concrete time frame is what I would say. But how we get this message out and how we educate people is doing interviews like this. It's doing speaking events and panel discussions within these respective states. It's writing op-eds and meeting new individuals and networking. It's from the grassroots level that we're really going to affect change. And this is a model that we've pursued, and our parent organization, Equal Justice USA, has pursued in many states where they've repealed the death penalty. And in the past 10 years, we've seen 6 states that have gotten rid of it, and we hope to see more in the near future.
Now, who do you expect to be next? You said Utah would be one. I mean, I don't know this for a fact, but isn't Texas a big death penalty state?
It is. It's obviously looked at as the epicenter of executions, which is probably not what many Texans want to be remembered for. But Georgia actually outpaced Texas last year for the most executions, which is obviously it's a dubious honor for the Peach State. Those are some states, you know, Texas, Oklahoma, Georgia, Florida. Those are states that are going to take a little bit longer to repeal the death penalty, but there's real reason to start that push there, because if you look at how they operate their systems, it's pretty egregious. You know, in Georgia, we executed a woman who turned her life around, became a member of the clergy on death row, and counseled her fellow inmate.
Hold that thought, Mark. This is Mark Hyden from Conservatives Concerned About the Death Penalty. We're going to come back with more from Mark, because I got to get the whole scoop. This guy's got it down well. And this is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horwitz. You miss an episode, go to libertytalk.fm, and you can download The Bubba Show every single day. We're going to step out here for a break. We'll be right back with more from Mark Hyden from Conservatives Concerned About the Death Penalty. Right back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here. The long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialady, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got the Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, Mark Hyden from Conservatives Concerned About the Death Penalty. Okay, so you're telling me about a woman who turned her life around on death row, and they still execute her. So go through that story, please.
Yeah, she actually was not the trigger person in the murder that was perpetrated, but she was a member of the conspiracy. And she was sentenced to die, but on death row, she became a born-again Christian and began counseling her fellow death row inmates and spreading a message of love. And she had definitely been reformed, but we executed her. We also executed a Vietnam veteran with PTSD, someone with low IQ, and someone who had been convicted 36 and a half years prior. So I don't think the way that we're running it in Georgia serves any penological purpose. But it's like this in other states that pursue death sentences with zeal. Florida's capital sentencing scheme's been declared unconstitutional at least two times in a single year recently, which might be a record. In Texas, they do not have a good track record. And all of these states combined account for a large portion of the individuals who have been wrongly convicted. So what we see is the states that pursue death sentences the strongest tend to run their death penalty programs the worst.
Okay, so, I mean, now, if I said to you, now, I know your stance, you're pro-life, and it's obviously about money, it's about a lot of different things, but if I said to you, Mark, the death penalty works, and it deters crime, and would that change your stance, or would you still be the conservative against the death penalty?
Well, I don't think it. I mean, I know it doesn't deter crime based on, you know.
No, I know. We know that. I mean, I'm just supposing it did. I mean, you know, if it did, would that change your stance, or it doesn't matter? I guess that's my question.
No, it wouldn't, because I'm still pro-life and okay. I still support fiscal responsibility. So even if it did deter crime, we'd still risk executing the innocent. And we'd still be wasting a ton of money and running a program that's unnecessary, since we can protect society from repeat actions by sentencing people to life without parole.
So what do you do with, I mean, not that we execute that many people, but what do you do with all the overcrowded prisons and the continuation of the prison population that continues to grow? I mean, what do you do with that?
Yeah, that's a good question. But if you look at the population in most of these prisons, these are nonviolent drug offenses. That's what's causing overcrowding. There are a few thousand people on death rows across the United States, but there's millions of people in prison for non-capital crimes. So those few thousand that you might add to maximum security prisons is not going to cause much stress on the system, considering they're already overloaded for other nonviolent reasons.
Right, so we know that, of course, we know the federal government likes to throw away money anyways, and if they throw away too much, they can just re-good and print some more. So how does your group and how does, you know, Ron Paul and North and all these other guys get it together where we can finally get this thing accomplished? Because obviously from a fiscal standpoint, it makes sense. And, of course, if you're pro-life, it makes sense. And for all the reasons you spoke, it makes sense. So how do we get the individual states to act? I mean, by educating them, I mean, they know, but, you know, what's going to get them off their dead ass to move over?
Well, they need to hear from their constituents. They need to hear from some of their fellow legislators. I've been talking with a few different legislatures recently. I've testified, and what I found is when I first go there, when they haven't had any death penalty discussions in years, there are many conservatives in the shadows in these state legislatures who have been against the death penalty for years, but they thought they were alone. So I let them know that there are these national leaders who oppose it. I let them know that the death penalty is inconsistent with our values, and I let them talk with their own constituents. And this is how we affect change at the state level. And, you know, you and I have talked about the federal government and you know, the budgetary issues that we see at that level. But most executions and death sentences come at the state level. So if we really want to make a major change, we have to repeal it at the state level. Because, you know, the state of Texas, they've executed well more than 300 people, whereas the federal government has executed three individuals in the modern era. So if we keep our focus on the state level, we'll affect change, fiscal responsibility, and also be able to promote pro-life policies at the same time.
Now, how big is your organization right now?
Oh, we're a small organization, but we are scrappy. So there's just a handful of us, and we're spread out across the United States. Michigan, Kansas, I'm in Georgia. We have our PR consultant is in Connecticut. But we're seeing state organizations rolling out their own spinoff groups, essentially statewide conservatives concerned about the death penalty groups. And this has happened in more than a half dozen states. So we're seeing growth at the state level as well as at the national level, which heartens me, makes me think that we're getting much closer to our end goal.
So if you were looking at it now, obviously you're in Georgia. I mean, are there states that you're targeting that you think might be easier to move off and get away from the death penalty? And obviously, I think Texas might be the toughest, or maybe Georgia might be the toughest that can change their mind. But are there states that seem to be a little bit easier to start to move? Are there some that are wavering that you think you could push over the edge with the right kind of movement?
Oh, I definitely think so. Utah is one of those that I hope to see them pass a repeal bill in the next few years, and you know, we'll have to wait and see if that happens. Washington State is another one where we've seen Republicans and Democrats coming together and saying this is a big broken government program and we need to repeal it. So if we have a program so bad that the left and right can agree on it, I think that really says something. So Washington State could see some movement in the next few years. Montana is another that's been very close. New Hampshire is one, Kansas and Kentucky. So we'll have to watch. But every state is somewhere in a different spot within the pipeline. And you're right. You know, Oklahoma, Florida, Texas, Georgia. You know, these are states where we're in it for the long haul. But we've already started to plant seeds and grow roots there, so that we can repeal the death penalty when the appropriate time comes.
Well, yeah, and I mean, I think, like I said, I'm in agreement with you on a lot of the cases. I mean, you know, I'm not necessarily totally against the death penalty but certainly from a fiscal way and some of the things you've explained, but I don't like the whole process. So, you know, I wouldn't mind seeing it scrapped as well, the way that you're trying to get it done. And you know, hopefully you'll have, you know, some success with, you know, your objectives. And I guess it takes more people, it takes a bigger contingency. And are you trying to grow your base and bring more people into your movement? And how are you going about doing that?
Oh, well, you know, I'm traveling all the time. I speak at universities, tea parties, Republican clubs. And that's how we educate individuals on the death penalty's many failures. And we recruit more people to become involved. And you know, I can tell you, when I go to these groups, many of them have never really considered the death penalty. They've never looked at it critically. So I go in there when I do my presentations, and sometimes they look at me a little weird at first. But by the end of my presentation, usually half, if not many more, of the attendees are against the death penalty, and they're asking how can they help repeal it, because this is inconsistent with our core tenets. So this is how we're trying to do it. You know, it's one person at a time. It's one political group at a time. And, you know, this takes a lot of time investment, but we're willing to do that.
One person, one vote, and you gotta keep squeezing and pushing them forward to get them to see the light of the way you see it. And are you You mentioned a little earlier bipartisan. Are there also some? I guess we'd say liberals. I don't know. Today I don't even know what a liberal is anymore. But would you? Are you participating with some from the other side of the aisle as well? Because you have a joint common practice or goal here.
Yeah, and I referred to it turned out to be a progressive friend of mine. I referred to them as a liberal recently, and I was chastised and told that was not the term they wanted to be called. So I'm a little confused of what I'm supposed to refer to them as well. But yes, it takes coalitions to repeal the death penalty. You know, you can look at other states like Connecticut and Maryland who have abolished capital punishment, and it took the left and right working together to achieve this. Now, if I talk with a progressive or a liberal, I'm going to find out that they're against the death penalty for far different reasons than me. But that's okay, because the end goal is the same, and it requires us reaching across the aisle to achieve this common goal. But I do think it's symbolic that our political system is not irrevocably broken. You know, we look at D.C. and we see gridlock. We see bipartisanship being viewed as almost taboo. And I'm happy to prove, at least at the state level, that bipartisanship is not taboo. And in fact, we can still achieve goals that are common to both sides and to help enact policies that we both believe in.
Well, I have to disagree with that. I do think, my personal opinion is, I do think Washington is a broken down system. I think that might be, in my opinion, the whole political system, in my opinion, has been kind of slightly busted. And I think that that's where we get a lot of these things, because I do believe that these guys actually, although outwardly they are enemies, inwardly they're figuring out how they're going to continue to keep their lifestyle while changing that of the average middle class guy. And I think that, to me, is a problem. And I hope that you're able to achieve your goal, and hopefully at the state level, maybe you'll get a little bit better than what I think we have at the federal level, because I think at the federal level we're really busted. But we're with Mark Hyman from Conservatives, concerned about the death penalty. We're going to step out here for a break. You can stick around for a little bit longer, Mark?
Absolutely.
We're going to step out here for a break. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, libertytalk.fm. We'll get you a download of the show every day. We're just pushing near 300,000, so let's go push that button and get there. The Bubba Show with Mark Hyman, conservatives against, concerned about the death penalty. The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz will be right back after the break.
After 10,000 beers and 20.
Welcome back to The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Mark Hyman from conservatives concerned about the death penalty. So, Mark, I was doing my usual. I was blasting the federal government because, again, I do think it's broken down. But I do think that you have a chance at the state level. And if there's any way we could ever get everything back to the state, I think you might even have a better chance to accomplish your goal. But do you take this? Do you take this state by state, and do you recruit members? And if you're trying to get members or people to help, go ahead and talk to my audience and see if anybody would like to come and help you.
Yeah, and we're invested in many different states, as we've talked about. And, you know, I'd love if any of your listeners want to get involved to, reach out to me. You know, my email is info@conservativesconcern.org, or they can go to our website and check out what we've been up to and sign up for our monthly email letter. Because there's many reasons why they should want to get involved. And, you know, Todd, I'd like to share a few just anecdotal stories that I think will probably appall a few of your, or more than a few of your listeners. This is a system that leads to terrible financial decisions, which I think will resonate with you, Todd. Here in Georgia, we raised taxes multiple times at the county level in Lincoln County just to cover the cost of a single capital trial. And it got so out of hand that the county commission went before the judge and said, "We're sorry, judge, but we're not going to fund this anymore." Well, the judge thought that was just the cutest thing. And then he threw the whole county commission in jail until they agreed to approve appropriations to continue funding this incredibly expensive capital process. But it's not just Georgia. This happens elsewhere. Nebraska, there's a county there where they mortgaged all their ambulances to cover the cost of two capital trials, and those people were never even executed. But this happens elsewhere. Jasper County, Texas, they raised their taxes, property taxes, by about 7% to cover the cost of a single trial. So this is one of the many reasons why we are pushing to repeal the death penalty, because it is a huge waste of money, doesn't protect society, It's harmful on murder victims' family members, and we know that it risks innocent lives because more than 156 individuals have been wrongly convicted and sentenced to die and released from death row. Meanwhile, many others have actually been executed who may have been innocent, people like Cameron Todd Willingham and Carlos de Luna in Texas. So this, you know, a lot of people may not view the death penalty as something that affects them, but if you're a taxpayer, it directly affects you, and there's many reasons that they would want to get involved.
The money part is for sure an issue, and again, obviously everybody's got their own individual, you know, feel, but again, I think that, you know, one of the things is what you're trying to do is to educate and explain the reason that you're concerned, and I think those are valid points and valid reasons, and since you're telling me the statistics bear you out that it doesn't defer or doesn't do anything, you know, how do we deal with these people? I mean, don't they deserve some type of punishment just greater than being life in prison? I mean, some guys seem not to mind it. I mean, I'm just kind of curious of your thoughts there.
Well, I mean, it really depends on what you want the criminal justice system to do. I mean, if you want it to be there as retribution, you know, that's one thing. But if you want it to be there to protect society from repeat offenders and to seclude them from the greater society, then I think life without parole does serve that purpose while not risking innocent life or costing nearly as much money as the death penalty. You know, there's other options. I know I've heard some people suggest that maybe they should look into passing a system of life without parole plus restitution, where the offenders actually have to work to pay restitution back to the murder victim's family members and into a fund that helps fund or bankroll their own keep while they're, you know, spending the rest of their lives in jail. So there are a lot of options out there, and I would say that nearly all of them are better than the death penalty.
I could go with that, make them work. That'd be something. Get them off, you know, and get them to work and pay back. That'd be something interesting. So, where's your next big rally or your next big meeting or your next big, you know, item that's on your agenda right now?
Well, we're going to be at CPAC next week, and I'm really excited about it. It's the fifth year in a row we've been at CPAC, which is the largest conservative gathering in the United States. So we'll be there speaking with the conservative grassroots and grass tops and educating them on what the death penalty does. And it's always a great experience for us. We always find so many new supporters, and we're generally inundated by people who thought that they were the only conservatives who opposed the death penalty, and they're always pleased to find out that there's a whole organization for them, and there's many others that feel the exact same way.
Well, yeah, I mean, again, I see that's one of the things I have the problem with at least the federal government is that, you know, we can be partially conservative on one point and maybe not conservative on the other. And I think that's where the parties have separated in logic over the years. It's one point back, you know, 40 or 50 years ago, they were both pretty much down the center and they had a couple of ideas, but now you've got, you know, it's so far one or the other that people are embarrassed to step out and say they believe in something like, in this case, pro-life and not the death penalty. So when you analyze the movement and you figure what is your, if in a perfect world, Mark, if we could do it perfectly, and I know, what would be your goal? You've got Utah, you said, in a couple of years. If you could get every state out, would it be like a 15-year horizon to get it all, to get everybody to say, hey, no more death penalty, or is it, you know, shorter, longer? What do you think?
You know, I'm terrible at predicting these things. You know, I'd like to have it all done this year, but I know that we're not at that point yet. So it would be impossible for me to even give you an estimate. You know, I'd love to have it done in 15 years. But we'll just have to play that one by ear because there's so many variables, so many things in flux. And, you know, like I said, Todd, we're not a very large organization. We're scrappy. We make a lot of noise. And, you know, we put in a lot of overtime. But there's only so many of us. So, you know, we'll take it one state at a time and see where we're at in the coming years.
Well, I'll tell you what, you got about a minute and a half. Give us your message and explain to my audience your message, and that'll give them, if anybody's interested, they can certainly reach out to you. So go ahead and shoot for it. Go for it, my man.
Well, I encourage your listeners to give the death penalty what I call the conservative litmus test. You know, ask yourself, is it pro-life? Is it fiscally responsible? Is it representative of a limited government? And does it serve any sort of productive benefit? Because I think the answer to all of those is no. And, you know, if you don't trust the government to fill potholes, in the end, you really shouldn't trust them to make life and death decisions. I hope they'll consider it, re-examine the death penalty, give it a critical look, and if they want to become involved or have questions, have them reach out to me at info@conservativesconcerned.org.
Mark Hyden, Conservatives Concerned About the Death Penalty, it was a great pleasure to have you on. I hope you come back on again and give us an update on what you're doing and how's it going.
Todd, let's do it again. I'd love to.
Mark, thanks so much for being here. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Was Mark Hyden, Conservatives Concerned About the Death Penalty. And if you have any thoughts on that, certainly shoot me an email or let me know. I mean, certainly if anybody wants to talk about it, my open invitation stands. You can come and talk your position on that. And of course, we respect what everybody does, and I'm always willing to listen and help others. But again, you know, let me know what you think about that. It was pretty interesting. And of course, one thing we always didn't know is that the cost to execute was always the cost of greater than to keep them in there. And I get, you know, according to Mark, it does not defer the willingness to create a capital crime. So, you know, again, everybody's got ideas, and I'd like to hear yours. If you got anybody, so you can email me at Bubba@BubbaTrading.com. I'm always interested in focusing on hearing what your opinions are. And if anybody's interested in trading futures, tomorrow night I'm starting my another futures class. You can get that at BubbaTrading.com, part-time day trading in the futures market. In the meantime, when you miss an episode, all you have to do is go to LibertyTalk.fm, and you can download the Bubba Show every single day. And of course, on the weekends, you can download the Sporting Edge, which is now being hosted by Xander. And of course, we have my brand new Bubba's Bottom Line weekly video podcast, which is available at BubbaTrading.com. That will do it for today, everybody. Thank you so much for being here. We always appreciate you. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Same time, same station. This is the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwitz. Have a great day, everybody. Thank you so much for being here. We'll see you later.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.